Well, guys, today I have something very special for all of you watching the Sat Signal. I have two of the best people in the Bitcoin industry globally. We have Sean from Australia, one of the most famous and well-respected Bitcoiners in the country, as well as my good friend Tony Yazbek from the Bitcoin Way. This one, we talk about how not to fuck it up as a Bitcoiner, what the difference between signal and noise is. We talk about the most common way that people new to Bitcoin lose their stacks, lose their way, and miss out on the greatest invention that has ever graced this planet, which is Bitcoin. This is a pure signal session with three full-on Bitcoiners that love what Bitcoin's about and really share in a very deep and real way why it is such a special invention and something that everybody who values their freedom, values their time, wants the best for their family, really needs to start to understand at a much deeper level. You're going to love this one, guys. Drop a like, drop a comment. Thank you for being here. Have a great one. Well, guys, it is fantastic to have two such legends on the pod once again on the Sat Signal. We got Sean from G'day Bitcoin. Sean's a friend of the pod and been instrumental in helping us get our show going. And of course, the one and only Tony from the Bitcoin Way. Links to both of these guys are in the description. How are you both? We'll start with you, Sean. What's happening?
Yeah, good. As I was saying before the show, really just tuned into the Bitcoin Signal, had a couple of podcasts with just some amazing Australian Bitcoin maxis. It just been incredible. Like every day stacking sats and then talking to Bitcoiners about this revolution. How can you complain?
Tony, you're good, mate, as always.
Fantastic, man. Fantastic. Every day in Bitcoin is a glorious one. So no complaints at that at this end.
We're on the opposite side of inflation, so our worlds are getting cheaper, whereas most people, their stress levels are rising, sadly, and everything looks like it's going up. But for Bitcoiners, everything's going down, which is just quite a unique way to live. So I think all of us remain grateful. But today, the point of the pod, guys, is there's a lot of noise versus signal out there. And for new Bitcoiners, which is a lot of my audience, and maybe, Tony, you can take this one, could you explain, just to start with, what is the difference between noise and signal? Because when I went up to your stand in Prague, I said, "How you doing, mate?" And you said, "Man, it's good. There's so much signal here." It was almost like you were talking about the Force in Star Wars. So what's the difference? What does noise versus signal mean in Bitcoin?
Well, it's very simple, man. Noise is just the fluff, you know, complete distractions, rubbish, no real substance to anything. Whereas signal is, you know, where you have, you know, truth messaging, you know, there's no sugarcoating anything. People are delivering messages straight to the point, telling you things exactly the way they are, exactly the way they're supposed to be, highlighting, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly about all of them. There's no like trying to pretend something is when it isn't, you know, there's no trying to trick you into anything. There's no trying to stimulate unnecessary FOMO into things, you know, that are likely going to get you wrecked. Pure signal is really about being honest about the topic at hand and delivering the right information so that everybody knows exactly what they're getting into, where they stand, how to proceed with no, you know, with no bad surprises waiting for them at any point in time.
Mm. And when it comes to Bitcoin, guys, we're talking about a profound invention that is reshaping one of the most important aspects of being alive, which is how we store our value, our energy, the good that we do in the world. We're talking about something significant. So the separation of noise and signal is super important, because what happens is when a good thing starts to get traction, then the scammers, the fraudsters, the banksters, you know, everybody sort of starts layering on to try and profit or manipulate or whatever. And what the purpose of this pod is, guys, is to help you as a new Bitcoiner, if this is your first cycle, not lose your stack and not let these noise distract you from the big game here. So let's start off, guys, with with probably some of the most common things that we see, because what happens is people get involved. This time around, we've got, you know, corporate has come to the party, TradFi or TradFi's. whatever you want to call it, traditional finance. And we're seeing, you know, BlackRock come along and they finally flipped from, you know, Bitcoin is terrible to we've now know how to tariff it and make money from it. So now they're all for it. What are some of the traps? Why don't we start with like Bitcoin lending, Sean? Because I know you run a Bitcoin podcast in Australia and so do I. you're getting a lot of inbound inquiry about it. Maybe you could just share some of the numbers, and we'll start about the innocent or the quality Bitcoin lending offers that are out there versus some of the other ones we're seeing more recently, which I want to dive into. But where can people get unstuck? Explain Bitcoin lending to us, Sean, in simple terms with real money, and then we can break down what we think of it.
Yeah, so like you can name names if you want to, but like one of the popular ones, you send them Bitcoin and they'll give you back fiat. The loan is no repayments over 12 months at all. You pay for it at the end, and you're paying back in the fiat dollars at 12.4%. So for like super easy math, say you lend them one Bitcoin. It's a loan to value ratio, LTV of 50%. So one Bitcoin at the moment is about $120,000 US. So they're going to give you $60,000 in US dollars. Deposit into your bank, you're going to get it pretty quickly, probably within 10 minutes. And you can go out and spend that. All well and good up until this moment. But as anyone that's been in Bitcoin, even for just a short period of time, maybe not since Donald Trump got elected, because it's sort of been an up-only market, but 36% drawdown can happen any day of the week at any time for no reason. Anyone that's been here for a while would just say, oh, it's another day in Bitcoin. Like it's all good. It's just what Bitcoin does needs to go down to be able to go back up. But people have maxed out. Human nature is to loan if they're already loaned against whatever asset. The most amount possible, 50% loan to value ratio, they're going to get a margin call. So they're going to have to quickly come up with $43,000 instantly to be able to top that back up to the 50%. If they don't do that, they're going to get margin called. They could lose their whole Bitcoin stack. I guess that's the scary thing, and people aren't willing to run the numbers. It only takes a couple of minutes on ChatGPT, like worst case. And that's not even a worst case scenario. That's just like an average day in Bitcoin. It's happened over and over and over again. There's just this meme chart. It's like 36%, 36%, 36%. And the chart looks like it's going straight up. And then if you're loaning against Bitcoin, but you need to pay it back in Bitcoin, that can get really bad really quickly.
We'll talk about that separately, but just for the listener to be clear, what Sean's saying is that you take 60,000 US dollar cash against 120,000 US dollar Bitcoin. If the value of the Bitcoin drops, they've only agreed to lend you 50% of the value of the Bitcoin. So if the Bitcoin drops to a certain level, you've got to top it up to stay within that parameter. It's called a margin call. So just getting super, super basic, and it can happen very easily. And meanwhile, and this is where Tony might chime in order to get that money, and this is where the counterparty risk sneaks in, let's assume best case scenario, you're a client of the Bitcoin way and you've learned proper air-gapped cold storage where nobody can touch your Bitcoin, right? You've had to move it from that safe environment where you are custodying your own wealth. You've had to move that Bitcoin out of that super safe, no counterparty risk environment over to this private company that is going to now hold that Bitcoin and the keys. And you now have taken on the risk that they could go broke, could disappear. And any kind of search will tell you that that's not that uncommon in the crypto space. Tony, do you want to speak to that quickly, that counterparty risk?
Yeah, of course, man. Where do I begin with these nightmare scenarios? Before I start, let's just rewind a little bit to simplify the situation. Maybe it'll clarify the reasoning later on. Bitcoin wasn't created to integrate into the legacy system. Okay, this is something that a lot of people to this day still seem to forget or ignore. You cannot play fiat games with Bitcoin. It's like oil and water. The two worlds do not mesh. What's going on today is trying to force Bitcoin into the legacy system by offering all these lending products, all this nonsense, this noise that we're starting to hear more of, in order to prey on the ignorance and fear of the masses that at this stage still don't understand anything about money, let alone how these games are actually played. At a very basic level, 99% of folks out there should not be engaging in any of that rubbish. Okay. Bitcoin is the most pristine money the world has ever seen. And it's also the most simple. If you don't want to break your head, all you need to learn is that you can own this thing, hold it yourself privately, and take no risks with it. That's it. You use it as money. It's your savings. It'll appreciate forever in value. Now, what these services do is that they prey on the greed of humans. Get rich quick. You know, there's no risk. They use all these fancy buzzwords that people, you know, instantly jump on. There's no taxes. You know, you don't pay capital gains. You can make more money. Low risk, no counterparty risk. All of these is complete nonsense. And the fact that people fall for them is that most of them don't do their research. First of all, a lot of people coming into these services don't understand money. And they certainly don't read the terms and conditions that are powering all these services. So they go in blind simply because somebody told them, or they think that so-and-so has a good reputation. There's no chance of things going wrong. All of these games are 100% counterparty risk, and they're maneuvered and controlled by variables that you cannot have any impact over. For example, the lending services. One, you're relinquishing control of your Bitcoin. That's red flag number one, because now you're trusting that platform with that Bitcoin. You're assuming, oh, it's a good, they're good people, good reputation, nothing will ever go bad. That's the first mistake you're making, because the most five-star institutions in the world have gone bankrupt overnight. So that's one. The other thing, most of them will KYC you. If you don't know what that means you have to upload every bloody piece of information about yourself to these people. You don't know how they're safeguarding that information. The day they get hacked or that information get leaked, you have a problem, because now someone very intelligent knows exactly who you are, how much you have, and where to find you. That's the other thing. The other thing is that you have no more privacy. These people all have full eyes on your wallet. Whatever you're doing, whatever you're sending and receiving, they know. Maybe you don't care today when Bitcoin's $1 million or more. Trust me, you will care. The other thing they don't tell you is that if you're not sitting on a large enough stack, for example, in the lending example, if you only have one Bitcoin and you give up that Bitcoin thinking, okay, I'm going to get an easy 50K, you are likely, I'd say 9 out of 10, going to lose that Bitcoin. And here's why. There are external factors in this world that are controlled by people with bad intentions that can, you know, manipulate markets in a way to drop the price point of Bitcoin even for 3 seconds. And the problem is that drop can happen when you're not paying attention. Depending where you live in the world, let's say you're sleeping at night and it happens like at 2 a.m. and you have no idea. You don't have enough time to put up that collateral. And if you only had that one Bitcoin to begin with, you don't have anything else to put up. So there goes your Bitcoin. You understand? This is where most people are going to be separated from their coins, which is why most of them should not even contemplate engaging in this thing. There's no such thing as free money. You want more Bitcoin? Find something to do that provides value to the world. Sell your service, sell your product. Take that money, buy Bitcoin, put it in your savings. That's it. It doesn't get more simpler than that. And we can get into some of the more creative and elaborative charlatans out there that are trying to push out these services, trying to trick people into thinking, well, you know, you're going to avoid taxes and you're going to get free money and all of these fun games, where in fact, you know, it's just a trap to separate you from your coins. So be very, very careful when you read these headlines, because most of them are wolves in sheep clothing.
It's interesting you say that, Tony, because next to your stand in Prague was a platform called Firefish. And I lend money, right? Like, as part of my portfolio, I do lending against real estate, what they call first mortgage lending. And most people who go to that stand would be Bitcoiners looking at, oh, I can get money against my Bitcoin. As a lender, I went up there and went, oh, how cool is this? I can lend a Bitcoiner money and they're going to basically lock up that person's Bitcoin plus my interest in a smart contract. And if the price drops, it's going to be instantly liquidated. I get their Bitcoin plus my interest locked together in what I'm taking no risk. Like, because I'm sophisticated and I understand how this works, from the lender side, I'm looking at Bitcoin going, this is the best lending deal ever. Whereas if I lend against real estate and the price of the real estate moves or the guy doesn't pay, I've got to put it through an auction process. I've got to, you know, pay all these people. That's months. So when you start to understand from the other side, from the banker's side or the lender's side, they're offering these loans in Bitcoin because they know it's phenomenal. You can get your money like that without even asking, because they hold the keys to your Bitcoin, or they're wrapping their interest into the smart contract. So their risk is zero. And that's really kind of interesting. And most people don't see it from that side. And we have seen, like Sean and all of us have seen some other products, and I don't want to name names, but it's one thing, as you said, Sean, like the company you were talking about there was obviously, I'm assuming, Ledin. Now, as far as Bitcoin lending companies, they seem like great people. They've been in the space. Jack Mullers is now lending Bitcoin. And Jack is, in my opinion, a great guy, a Bitcoiner. But then, and these guys are lending you fiat money, and they're charging you interest in fiat money. And then you use the fiat money for whatever you want. But we just saw a product, and again, we won't name names, but where they're lending you, you give them a Bitcoin, they give you back 95% of your Bitcoin in Bitcoin, and they keep 5% of your stack. And then they give you 12 months to come back to them, and then you've got to give them back a whole Bitcoin to get a whole Bitcoin. And you're like, how does that work, right? And so they're actually pricing. So straight away, you give up 5% of your Bitcoin stack, and then you've got to repay the loan in Bitcoin in a year from now. Now, if Bitcoin goes up, like the CAGR might be 40% on average, it means that your loan's gone up 40%. The whole point of borrowing money in fiat is fiat's garbage and it's going down and the debt deflates over time. But when you're borrowing and having to repay in Bitcoin, and you think about from the lender's side, what risk are they taking? You gave them one Bitcoin, they give you back 95% of the same thing they just gave you. They've just swiped 5% of your stack. And then in a year, if you either come back with a full Bitcoin to get another Bitcoin back, then what risk is the lender taking? Zero. And what do they get? 5% of your stack.
Yeah. I think just to double click on the point that you're making, Adam, from a business point of view, if you're lining out, like to receive Bitcoin, there's like one of the greatest business models in the world. You can liquidate it straight away. It's great for the company, but for the individual, it becomes incredibly hard. And say that 95% of the Bitcoin, or like 9.5 if you lend them 10. If, like, what are you doing with that Bitcoin? Obviously, you're loaning against that Bitcoin to try and make more Bitcoin. So you go into like Bitcoin treasury companies, which is like leverage on top of Bitcoin already. And if the market crashes, like you've wiped out 95% of your stack as well. So like you could very quickly lose 100% or 50% of your stack straight away, because while over time Bitcoin goes up and to the right, what's going to happen today or tomorrow or next week or next year? We have no idea. And especially where we are within the cycle, like people at the moment on X are calling for a $400,000 Bitcoin the next 60 to 125 days. If that happens, the world has gone really bad very quickly. Nobody wants that to happen. Like there is total chaos. But apart from that happening, $400,000 isn't going to happen in the next, you know, by the end of the year. It's just not. But people start to believe this and they repost and they're like, Bitcoin's only 120,000. Gonna loan against it. I'm gonna leverage out a little bit. MicroStrategy is gonna go to the moon. I'm gonna do that and then I'll be easy. I've loaned against $1.2 million and received back $1.14 million. I'm gonna put that all into MicroStrategy. I'm gonna ape in. That's gonna turn into $4 million when Bitcoin's $400,000 and then I'm gonna pay it back. But if that doesn't happen, or if we're close to the top of the market, which could very much be likely, 120 to 150K is fair value at the moment, and to think that it's just going to keep going up, eventually it won't. And if your loan repayment comes due when you need a repay back in Bitcoin and you have no other Bitcoin and you've leveraged out or gone into Bitcoin leveraged plays, you've missed it. Like, you no longer have freedom money. You're not safe. You're not secure, and that's tragic. It's going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, just to add to this, most people have no need to borrow against their Bitcoin. Like, what do you need the money for? This is a fiat mindset. It's built on greed. Unless you're like a Michael Saylor of this world that knows, you know, those sophisticated investment, you know, ins and out. This is not your playground. You have to stay away from this as far as possible, because something in that whole infrastructure is going to go against you and you're going to end up losing absolutely everything. if you can't afford to buy something or to do something, then step aside and wait until you can. Yes, I understand it sucks, but if you don't want to risk losing everything, then stay away. Lending, you know, because you think you're going to save taxes and what have you, that's a dangerous game to play. Because, you know, given enough time, first of all, there's no specifically defined regulations around this. The rules can change at any point in time. You can attract the attention of whatever tax authorities in whatever jurisdiction to come your way. They'd shut you down or make things like a nightmare for you. And then you're caught in the middle of this whole whirlwind. And you're placing so much trust in that institution that's supposedly giving you this, you know, glorious tax-free, tax-deferred loan. If they get, you know, shut down or prevented from acting, then again, you've lost completely everything you've put up there. There's no need for this. Buy your Bitcoin, hold it offline in self-custody. Nothing out there, at least nothing that I know of, will outperform Bitcoin. So don't think you're smarter than the market. You're not. There's provably, you know, investments out there that have tried to do this in the past, have completely blown up. Bitcoin right now is the fastest horse in the race. And like I said, I haven't seen anything outperform Bitcoin over a long enough time frame. So unless you're that super sophisticated Michael Saylor type investor that knows exactly when and where to place your bets and moves, stay away. This is like a recipe for disaster, and it's for 99% of folks not to touch ever or even to consider.
And the other part, Tony, to this as well is there's the lending companies, the other obvious service. And this is where, you know, Bitcoin Way is doing such a great job, is being charged for custody, because basically it's kind of a double whammy. And I didn't fully appreciate this, Tony, until I myself became a Bitcoin Way customer. And guys, I'm not trying to just pump Tony's business here. He doesn't need help pumping his business. He's doing fine. I'm just telling you, for years, I used custodial service and I paid good money for it. Fortunately, the service I use, I had a high level service and it wasn't linked to the size of my stack. It was a fixed fee, which was about $2,000 a year for a high level of, you know, as high a level as it goes before you proper self-custody. But there are lots of services out there. Now that I've gone through the Bitcoin Way process and I run a Bitcoin node and I properly understand air gap, you know, proper cold storage, security, all this stuff. Oh my God, it is incredibly...
Let's go.
I can see you laughing, Sean, as well, because I've just gone through the process. I'm holy shit. That's when I really started to truly appreciate the genius and the power of Bitcoin, when I became the Bitcoin Way customer. But then when I think about it in hindsight, like these fucking people that are proposing that they charge me a percentage of my stack for offering something that, now that I understand it, isn't as good as what I can do myself, and I'm paying for it, and it's indexed to the growth of my stack for no difference in the service that's being offered. It's the ultimate bankster product, right? And so I just want to, you know, Tony or Sean, either of you can comment on this, but it's like you're giving up the security and the privacy, because I didn't understand when I run my node, I'm actually running private. I'm going dark mode almost, right? Like, it's my business from that point. So I get the privacy, the security, and I don't pay anything. And I'm like, holy fuck, like, I wish I'd been grabbed by the ears and screamed at earlier.
Well, it's very simple to explain why this is going on. These people are intelligent enough to know that most people out there don't understand this space. This is brand new. They have no idea about anything. And so they prey on this. It's like almost like taking candy from a five-year-old. By promoting this, we'll keep you safe, no points of failure and all that. What they're doing is that they're keeping you trapped in that fiat mindset where you need to depend on a third party in order to protect your money. That mindset must die. You have to kill it. There is no human being out there that I have encountered, that I know of, that is not intelligent enough to learn seven steps. Most of these services are hypocritical as well, because they complain all day long about, you know, governments, unrealized capital tax, gains tax, wealth tax, inheritance tax, and all that other nonsense. However, their pricing model is no different. When you charge someone a percentage of their net worth, what is that exactly? Isn't that a wealth tax? To me, it sure sounds like one. And if that person changes their mind, then you charge them an even higher wealth tax to exit. What does that sound like? Sounds like an exit tax as well. So how are you any different from the same people that you complain about all day? Or is it somehow justified because it's you now?
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin exists outside the system. Most people that are offering these rubbish services don't come from the tech world. They're TradFi people. So they cannot possibly understand the detailed implications of cybersecurity and the tech involved to learn how to do proper self-custody. It's just not their playground. And so what do? They push out the simplest, easiest 5-minute in and out process to clients because they know that these people know even less than they do. And so these people, the clients, not only are paying a substantially high price for the illusion of protection, which doesn't exist, or at least very minimally exists, but the trade-offs that they're giving off, first of all, is a big percentage of their stack, their complete privacy, and they're taking a counterparty risk because that involves massive trust in that institution that you're now supposedly, you know, going to for the protection of your money. If they get coerced or shut down by a government and you've lost one of your keys, you're out completely. There's no recourse for you. All of this is completely avoidable by you taking the time to learn no more than 7 or 8 steps. This is not rocket science. I've said this like a million times and I'll continue playing the same record. Anyone can do self-custody. You just have to get out of your own way thinking that you're too dumb to do it because you don't come from a tech background. No one I work with comes from a tech background. And we work with people from all ages, 50s all the way well past their 80s, that are 100% fully sovereign individuals. None of these guys are tech folks beyond its most basic functionality. Yet all of them are dealing with encrypted vaults, fully air-gapped wallets, running nodes. Some of them, a lot of them actually lately, have even got into proper decentralized solo mining. This is an exciting new opportunity for the world. Bitcoin is not meant to, you know, keep you trapped in the bad habits of the fiat world. You have got to kill that. And once you put it out of your head that you want to like step away from that corrupt world, everything changes. You know, like you're no longer playing on the same chessboard that was created to rip you off since the day you were born. You're not breaking any rules, right? You're not evading anything you're not supposed to be paying for. You're just opting out into a system that is controlled by no one. And so once you start vibing at that frequency and living in that future, which anyone can do as of this precise moment, everything changes. It completely changes the way you walk in this world. You are no longer begging for permission. All of this rubbish, ETFs, Bitcoin treasuries, lending, all of that noise, you know, it becomes like this murmur in the distance that means absolutely nothing to you. Because right now, your value, your life, especially financially, is being upgraded at such a fast pace just because of Bitcoin's inherent nature. Finite supply, no one can manipulate it, permissionless, trustless, completely different galaxy in terms of, you know, the new monetary world that we're headed into, and anyone can step into it right now, like right this second. You don't need anybody. Because I've also said it in the past, Bitcoin is the simplest, most dumbest solution, yet people somehow want to complicate things by somehow meshing it into the fiat world, which is a complete mess, a complete sham, a Ponzi scheme from beginning to end. You have got to understand this before Bitcoin makes, you know, makes so much sense to you. And the conviction you have behind it becomes, you know, that resonates with something where, like, someone like myself. You know, like, I've spent like thousands of hours. I've lived through the other side of the fiat horror, okay? You don't want to walk in my shoes because most people have not made it out. It took me a year of hell. I promise you it is a movie you have never, ever seen and can't possibly fathom as how bad it is. And it is coming. Don't think this is isolated to me or to one country. I already see the signs. The UK, in my opinion, is the next Lebanon imminently. The signs are already happening in Australia. They're happening in Europe. They're coming absolutely everywhere. And all of these shit games that you're seeing, all these distractions that are built on that fiat legacy system are just desperate attempt for these charlatans to extract as much Bitcoin from you as possible, because when that collapse happens, they're going to be okay, but you're not.
Guys, if you're enjoying this pod, Tony's bringing the fire. Show the love in the comments, because that is... Sean and I just sit there, get the popcorn, go, preach it, brother, because it's so true. And it's, you know, I watched this video that went viral in Australia this week, a guy walking around Woolworths going, let me show you how fucked Australia is in terms of the cost of living crisis. This is how much milk is. This is how much chocolate is. And I'm going, as a Bitcoiner, all of that stuff got cheaper for me because we've stepped away from that world. It's just a completely different experience. And what Tony's talking about here, guys, is personal sovereignty and ownership over your financial future. Sean, what do you got to say when you hear that?
If you haven't already watched it, for Adam's audience, watch that podcast between Tony and Adam. Like, you get more of Tony's story, because Tony's talking from a lived experience from what happened in Lebanon. We won't go into it, but it's intense, and I think you should take a moment to do it. But before I just talk about what Tony did, Adam, like, I've made an observation with you went from a collaborative custody model to working with the Bitcoin way, and like this light bulb has gone off. You're like, oh, Bitcoin, like the polite way to say it, it's unconfiscatable money. Mm-hmm. The Bitcoin maxi way to be able to say it, it's like, it's fuck you money, or it's like you become unfuckable when you take control of it. Like, to see that light and you're like, oh, like it takes your journey of Bitcoin to a deeper level, because it's the first time in history where we can completely hold something, private property. I've been homeless, I've been on the streets and stuff. I know what it's like to have absolutely nothing to my name. And then when you've got this one thing, Bitcoin, Michael Saylor calls it hope, other people call it hope. When you've got this thing that is hope, but that you can 100% take control of, nobody can take it away, no government, institution, entity, person, whatever. It's up to you to hand over those keys. And maybe those keys don't exist. That's pretty empowering. And it's the first time that we can actually do that. But in regards to what Tony's saying, like, I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions, Tony. So the collaborative custody model, people go for it because they think it's easier, and they buy the lie that it's safe. Like, it's definitely not counterparty risk and all that stuff, government regulation, just the people running the company or whatever, good people or not, it doesn't matter. You're handing over your sovereignty. But they just think, too hard basket, I'm going to outsource it, it's safe enough or whatever. But Tony, you're helping like anyone. You're saying that a lot of them don't come from a tech background. I've watched testimonials of people that are 78 years old. You've taught them that. But you said it's only seven steps. Worst case scenario for a client that you've had, what's the longest it's taken them to get it, to get to Adam's level of like, oh, well, this is Bitcoin. Like, this is unconfiscatable money. I can hold it. So like, say they're locked up for a year, 1% interest, they need to pay an exit fee. That's going to cost them a lot of money. If they're to sit with you and like the client that took the longest to get it, like, how long was it? Still just only like a couple of sessions, or what was that process like? Maybe to give a real world example.
And yeah, also, look, Tony, if you could just also, just for the newbie, explain exchange custody, like you buy it on CoinSpot and you just leave it there, collaborative custody, and then real self-custody, just that. And then also the thing Sean said, people understand what collaborative it is. Yeah,
absolutely. This goes back to the definition of Bitcoin redefining the whole way of thinking. All our lives, we've been brainwashed to think that you need a third-party custodian in order to protect your money, which is why, you know, we work for that worthless paper and put it in a bank thinking it was safe. When you buy Bitcoin and you leave it on an exchange, it's no different than leaving your money in a bank. It's not yours. You think it's yours just because you have temporary access to it. But as we've seen numerous times, that access can be restricted or completely revoked for any reason at any point in time. And they won't even justify why they did it. They'll just tell you, sorry, we had to close it, game over, figure it out, gone. So you take out the money out of an exchange and you put it in an institutional collaborative custody. You haven't changed anything. You've just replaced the exchange by another form of counterparty risk, which is that institution. You still have the KYC with most of them, so your data is also sitting with them as a sitting duck, hoping, praying it doesn't get leaked or hacked. And you've given full eyes to another bunch of people into whatever it is that's going on in your wallet, which you absolutely don't want to do, especially as the value of Bitcoin goes on. And the third worst part, in my opinion, is that you're still trusting human beings when you absolutely don't have to. Good people will go bad under the right circumstances, and I swear to you, they will not be thinking about you first. They will throw you under a bus instantly to save themselves. That is a fact, human nature, undeniable. No human being will ever, you know, you can argue against this. I've seen it happen, and it's continued to happen. Just the nature of the beast. With Bitcoin, you don't have to play that game. You don't need to take that risk. But it requires you to trust yourself enough to believe that you have the intelligence and capacity to learn 7 or 8 new steps, which I believe you do. Any human being, unless there's a really extreme scenario, anyone can do this. So again, it's the whole mindset of trust when it comes to money that needs to be broken. You can no longer think that way. And as long as you attach that fear to that trust, you won't get far, especially not in Bitcoin. And this is what I see happening, you know, with the whole government and institutional adoption of Bitcoin. A lot of people are cheering it on because of the number go up. The most worthless metric out there is that dollar amount, what people are measuring their wealth in, which is the last thing you need to do. So the way I see this, this is how governments and institutions attack Bitcoin, because of course they're too smart to attack it head on. They know they will fail. You cannot stop peer-to-peer tech. So that's not going to work. So what do? They embrace it fully. Oh my gosh, it's the best thing. You know, we're going to make this and this great again. You're going to become super wealthy. But as long as you keep your Bitcoin with us, right? So they're trying to shift the narrative about Bitcoin to keep the bad habits of making you dependent on them. That's why you hear so much talk about ETFs. That's why they talk about, now we're given permission for the banks to custody Bitcoin. The idiots are happy because they think number go up. But those that are paying attention can see very clearly that this is a trap to keep unknowing people, which is still the majority of folks out there, into, okay, well, this Bitcoin thing is going to make me rich. This bank lets me use it. Let me keep it with them. Until the day comes where you get a 6102 or something similar, boom, your money is gone. And people are like, what happened? This is what's going on in the world. The Bitcoin treasuries, all these fiat services, these are for a limited number of sophisticated individuals. I calculate maybe 1% of the global population maybe can take advantage of this. For most people, this is not for you. Like, this should be like north and south. You should be going the complete opposite direction every time you hear about a service like this. It is not for you. The only task for those that are worried about, you know, preserving their time and energy is to find a way to truthfully, legally accumulate value, save it in Bitcoin, hold it yourself, and forget any third-party service out there. You don't need them at all. That is why Bitcoin was created, right? It's not created to keep one foot here, one foot there. That is a fear that is causing you to do that. And that becomes that happens because of the lack of understanding of Bitcoin at the protocol level. When you come from the world of tech and you've studied Bitcoin as much as I did, you know you can't stop this. Like, I mean, when I first discovered Bitcoin, even I thought it was too good to be true. And so coming from my collapse, like, I really had to be sure, like, I wasn't setting myself up for another disappointment. So I tried to tear this thing apart, you know, with all of my cybersecurity and tech background. I tried to like blow it up in as many ways as possible. No chance. I failed spectacularly. And then I learned that there's been many governments before me with all their infinite resources. These idiots also failed spectacularly. And so it wasn't going to happen. And this was like in 2019, 2020. You fast forward to today, you can kiss that dream goodbye. It's not going to happen. They know this. We know this. They're trying to shift the narrative into like having people believe that Bitcoin is good, but as long as it's with them. That's why you never hear them mention two words, self-custody. Find me any politician or custodian that talks about self-custody. You won't find it. Why? because it was created to obsolete them completely. This is why I say you can, that two worlds cannot coexist, oil and water. You want to win in Bitcoin, you have to hold it yourself in self-custody. There's no other way. There's no shortcut. There's no maybe this, maybe that. It's either this or nothing. So some people will learn this. Thankfully, there's a lot more folks that are paying attention and learning these skills. But there's a lot more that still don't believe it for whatever reason, because they think they live in such a financially privileged situation that this will never happen here. That's a very dangerous delusion that you're living by, my friend, because I lived it as well. And let me tell you, when it blows up in your face, there's no one that's going to care about you. No one's going to feel sorry for you. You're going to be standing all alone like a loser, like I did, and have to try to figure things out from that point on. You don't need to do this, you know? So pay attention, follow like the right information, ignore the noise. There's no shortcuts. There's no free money, all that, you know, fiat nonsense. Get it out of your head.
Yeah. So guys, in summary there, there's leave the money on an exchange where it can be hacked. These are private companies and they are obviously a honeypot. Somebody hacks the exchange. It happened to Binance last year, $1.4 billion of Ethereum just stolen, right? And they're like, oh, sorry, but they made their customers whole. But I was surprised they did that. But not many institutions could make their customers whole on a $1.4 billion hack. And that was one of the biggest exchanges in the world. It happened 12 months ago, right? So just taken, gone, confiscated. What happens if they don't make you whole? And still happening now. Sam Bankman-Fried, same thing. That's leaving it on exchanges. Then you've got custodial services where you rely on private companies who have a service, which is take it off the exchange, give it to us. But what? How do you know what they're doing? How do you know that the CEO isn't out on Sydney Harbour getting on the bags and the fucking beer, and he's got the fucking password in his pocket? You know, like you have no idea what they're actually doing, what their custody protocols are, who they are. You just see the logo on the website and trust them because your mate told you or you watched a YouTube video, right? That's shared custodial. And then there's self-custody, which is what I have. And when Tony said to me, Adam, because he pointed out the weaknesses of my former setup, you know, I'm relying on a third-party custodian. He said, Adam, I could have my computer stolen, my hardware blow up, have to leave where I live and be in Thailand tomorrow, and in 30 minutes I could be back up and running and have full access to my stack without any other counterparty involved. And I'm like, motherfucker, I'm signing up. And he says, but I thought, I said, dude, I'm freaked out about this. Like, I'm nervous about this. He goes, Adam, trust me, which I did, and thankfully I did. By the end of our experience, you will be sleeping like a baby because you will know. Like, literally, I just got up a call with Ahmed and we were going through all the worst case scenarios. What happens if this happens or that happens, or somebody attacks me on the street and wants all my Bitcoin? Like, we ran through it all. We worked out a full stack that's completely secure and non-reliant on anybody. It's incredible. Sean, do you want to add something to this before we move on to? Because I think I'd love to hear your perspective, Sean, as an Aussie, because what he's talking about here is, you know, they're bringing CBDCs and that privacy issue and control through money. Money is the most powerful way to control people. In Australia, and the Fin Review just recently came out and said that 50% of the voting population of Australia is principally reliant on the government for their major source of income. 50%. That means we've crossed the Rubicon into a socialist environment, right? Control the money, control the people. And so this is your chance to actually control your money without government, bank, anything. Sean, what do you got to say as an Aussie living in the next UK?
Fix the money, fix the world real quick, holding self-custody. But I think, like, you've brought up a couple of interesting points, and I just want to go back to the bankers, like how they're trying to capture it. JP Morgan, for example, was so against it and so much fun and everything. Now the banks can hold it. It's all good, you know, happy days. Same with Larry Fink with BlackRock. And they want your Bitcoin. Best case scenario in the world, you've got your Bitcoin in a bank or whatever, and nothing goes wrong. Best case scenario, it's there when you need it. But what we are seeing happen around the world feels like it's written straight out in 1984. For example, this unrealized capital gains tax that's proposed on superannuation balances over $3 million. I'm not saying that it will, but the way that it's written, it could be applied to the family home or any asset later down the track. Maybe it's 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the track. But if we've got 54%, and Adam, I think it was more like 54% instead of 50% of the Australian public relying on the government, that's going to keep growing. The government's directly going to be feeding people. So now they're talking about central bank digital currencies, and people are like, oh, that'll never happen in this country. Australia started working on CBDCs in 2021 with a project, and the project was called Atom, Project Atom. So they are coming. And what's wrong with the central bank digital currency? If all goes well, it's like a stable coin, basically. It's quicker digital money. Worst case scenario, they can program interest rates. So Tony may have a positive interest rate. Adam may have a negative interest rate. So that's forcing Tony or incentivizing Tony to save, Adam to be able to spend because his money's just dropping out. They can tax you at will, which is what they're proposing over in Europe. So that's one thing. And they can just shut it off. They can just give everyone a haircut. That's pretty dystopian.
And also, I'll just add to that, mate, that it gets programmable, that it can only be spent in certain places and like locations and outlets. So the money might work in Sydney, but won't work in Perth. It might work in Woolworths, but not at the liquor store. So you think that money can't be used to control people? And when you layer in on that AI, where we're heading to a world with mass layoffs, where's the money going to come from? If your money is the central bank digital currency coming in through universal basic income, what freedom do you really have? The UK just announced that if you travel out of the UK more than 3 times a year on that fourth trip, it automatically triggers an audit of your tax return in the background to see whether your tax return supports you leaving the UK more than 3 times a year. Like it was just been announced last week. Sorry, cut you off, but carry on, Sean.
Well, that's totalitarian. You know, it's already happening in China and different parts of the world. So, like, and I don't even think what I'm saying is the worst case scenario. The people in control will think of way worse things, but that's bad enough. Then digital IDs, pair that. Like, we've got this under 16s bill coming in at the end of the year, which will require everyone to verify themselves on the internet, so they know what you're looking at, they know what you're doing, and then they can just tie that to your Bitcoin, and or not your Bitcoin, to the CBDC, and shut you off and spend it. Holding Bitcoin in self-custody is the only way that you'll be able to get around that. And then people are like, nah, they're not going to bring in like the digital IDs or something. They've already been here since 2015 in this country. So like, while, you know, they've been researching CBDCs since 2021, and the RBA sort of says, oh, this will be just between banks only or maybe retail. Well, now they're starting to do like trials and start putting them out. It may not come about straight away, but once they're here, it's too late. Like, we've got a short window of time. I wouldn't give it any more than 3 years, in my opinion. Maybe we have shorter, maybe we have longer. The key is we've got time right now to take Bitcoin in self-custody. And once you do it, it's not hard, it's not expensive, it's just skills. Then it doesn't matter. Like, they can play their games, but you, your family, are good. If, you know, if something like Lebanon happens in Australia, but you've got Bitcoin in self-custody, you're okay in that moment, and then you can plan your next step. But if you don't have Bitcoin in that situation, it's too late.
And the problem, Sean, is it's not just the control of the money, it's the control of your voice. So, like, we're going to be face scanning all Australians to use YouTube. Like, that, literally, like, I don't know if you know this, Tony, but this law that comes in December 17, it's not just social media. YouTube has been put into social media. So, to verify, you know, protect the kids, of course, that's how most tyranny is brought in through the false, you know, horse of protecting. You know, like they say, when the government turns up and says, we're here to help, you should run. But, you know, like, what you watch on YouTube is going to be known because you're going to be facial recognition. Make sure you're not under 16 because YouTube and the world's knowledge is so dangerous. You know, definitely don't let kids near the best training tool the world has ever invented, right? That's free. But you know, you go onto YouTube, watch it. You think that there's not, they're not making arrests. In the UK, they're making, I think it's 3,500 arrests. They're arresting 10 or 15 times more people in the UK than they are in Russia for what people are saying in comments. There's a taxi driver serving a 7-year sentence in London right now for comments that he put on a Facebook meme. So it's silencing the voice. So in the future, you know, we're seeing right now in Australia, people can't get their money out of banks to buy Bitcoin. Like literally, I get messages every day where the banks are saying, we've frozen your funds pending a discussion with our security officer. ANZ's doing it right as we speak. So they're literally controlling your money as it is right now. But if they don't change tact in the future, I can see a world where you will not be able to see this video, where we're talking about self-custody. Those two words together will be put into the algorithm and you can't see it, or they'll monitor. And if you have positive comments under here, they'll track you, they'll flag you, because this is their worst nightmare. When all of a sudden you don't need the bank and you don't need to borrow money from the bank and you don't need the bank at all, that fucks them. And they're not going to be too happy about that. And at the moment, the Australian position is what we're seeing in the US is the banks debanked the Trump family. And so Donald's just said, you want to fucking debank us? How about we debank the banks? And that's what the Trumps are doing, is they're basically saying, you know what? Fuck you, crypto's coming for as long as we're here. And you know, love him or hate him, but Donald Trump is not a guy that you want to cross, and he doesn't forget ever. And then he'll get his kids to never forget, and he'll fuck you for generations. That's my view.
I think the game changed in 2008, right? You know, when the whole financial collapse happened. And it also took like an accelerated change during COVID. I think COVID really blew up in their face in a spectacular way that they didn't see coming. And what it did is that it woke up a lot of folks, and the pushback has been crazy since. And that their narrative has been failing, you know, ever since. And then comes along Bitcoin, you know, this middle finger given to governments and banks that have choked people for centuries. And they're like, you know what? Enough is enough. This is the answer. Like, you know, that sly roundabout way, that's Bitcoin. And now that more people are paying attention to it, well, you know, they're getting more desperate. So all of these crazy stories that you see, you know, propagating all over the place, this is because these crooks are losing their grip on power, and they're desperately trying to hold on. My issue with all of this isn't what they're doing. It's with the lack of response from the people, you know, in relation to all this nonsense. Like, where's the pushback? You complain about it all day. They're throwing your ass in jail for stupid reasons, and you're just like putting your hands and letting them drag you like a little dog into a cage. Like, where's the pushback? What does that tell you about the population itself? I think the people are the bigger problem than the problem itself, right? Like, I mean, like I said in the past, a bully will bully. That's what he does. Until somebody, you know, beats the shit out of him, then he'll leave you alone. But if I don't see anyone beating anybody up, I see everybody bending over and like, you know, okay, put me in jail.
Govern me harder. Govern me
Yeah,
harder.
govern me harder. So if that's what you want, then shut up. Don't complain, you know? People think they don't make a difference, which I completely disagree with. There's enough people out there that will align with your, you know, with your mindset and don't want to put up with this bullshit. Now, no one's advocating, you know, causing problems and going to war, but there is a peaceful solution. That's what Bitcoin is. It's a peaceful revolution. There's no guns involved. There's no killing involved. It's just, I don't want to play your stupid game anymore. I'm out. You know, like you're at a shitty party, you leave. It's as simple as that. But you have to learn how to do it. So, in the same way you learned how to drive, you're going to learn how to self-custody. This isn't rocket science. But you have to accept that this is what you have to do. If you still think somehow you're going to find an answer in this broken, rotten, corrupt system, well, it's a lose-lose scenario for you're going nowhere. And I genuinely believe, and now especially with the existence and the advancements of AI, which is happening at like an alarming speed, the world will be split. There's going to be a part of the world that are okay living as slaves because that's exactly what they're going to be like. And there's going to be a large percentage of the population that will be living in ways the world has never known yet, right? Completely sovereign individuals. Those people you cannot control no matter what they do. And now they've got insanely powerful wealth outside the system, and they understand AI. A lot of them will understand AI. AI has been is fascinating for me, and it fits into my playground. If you know what's happening in AI now, you won't sleep. So the days that you thought this can only happen in a movie, well, those days are here, my friend. And I'm not talking about the AIs that you see most people use, like those centralized systems like ChatGPT and all that. I'm talking about the real deal, the decentralized, uncensored systems that you can download and build your own machines to run. Those are going to become, a major powerhouse for those that understand it. And it's going to force humanity to either upgrade their skill set or be completely replaced. And it's already starting to happen. It's coming. It's already here. In China, there's like a boatload of companies that don't have any human beings. They're all replaced by machines. So all the low-hanging fruit jobs, and it's not to discredit anybody's job, honest work is honest work, but you're living in a completely different atmosphere now. There's AI, super intelligent machines that never tire, always learning, that will replace all the low-hanging fruit. So you need to step up your game significantly in order to be the ones that control that AI and not be replaced by it, right? So the world I want to live in, if you really want to see a world that is more sane, that AI needs to replace all the garbage making decisions in the world today. Because AI, by definition, has no bad intentions. But when you put AI under the control of stupid people, that's when you have problems. So at some point, this will happen, whether they like it or not, because AI, its essence, is open source, free. You cannot tame open source. You can try to control it, try to ban it, try to make it illegal, try to scare people to believe you're rubbish. But as we clearly see, especially in Bitcoin, a lot more are not paying attention to you and they're ignoring you 100% of the time because the incentives are more favorable for them to do so. And so when people see their lives improve, nothing you say will matter. It'll be like noise, blah, 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 like a buzzing fly. And at some point, somebody will swat you. So the days of corruption and theft, those are ending. And the proof of it is all these draconian measures that you're seeing. So at some point, and that's my biggest fear, is that things will break past the point of no return. And then you will see the insanity that I lived through in Lebanon on a global scale. And I'm not here to be the doom and gloom messenger. I'm just, relating to an experience that I lived through. And Lebanon is a little shithole, as a country. It's a tiny little country. You get 5% of this in a big place. Like, let's say, for example, the United States, you want to see a world war, you're going to have it locally. Mm-hmm. So we're living through crazy times, man. We can talk about this for an infinite amount of time, but people need to pay attention. We are not going back to the fax machine. We're not going back to the typewriter. We are living in the digital age now. There is uncensorable, unconfiscatable money. You need to understand this and pay attention to it. Otherwise, you and you alone are responsible for your demise. No one else is.
It's happening now. This dystopian world, I travel a lot, right? And I look at the fiat prices of things, and I think the average punter on the street is trying to make sense of this. One of the biggest aha moments is when you realize that things are going up as a function of broken money. What the government is trying to tell everybody is things are going up because of price gouging, because Coles and Woolies and the banks are all profiteering. That's happening. But the real problem is just the massive amount of money that is being produced into the system. I looked last night, I was with a friend. I said, look at this. I went into realestate.com. We're both here in Cyprus. I put a filter, properties over 10 million in Sydney that are apartments. There's dozens of them. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? This is an apartment and it's over 10, it's normalized. A gallon of milk, $8. a block of cheese, $10. And when I looked at it, this is on this guy's reel, and it says 50% off then for a block of fucking cheese. And like, it's right there in front of people's faces, but they can't see that. You know, like, if you look at the money supply and how much money has been printed, you look at the Victorian government, the most indebted state in Australia, has put the state into more debt since 2012, since Parliament was incorporated in 1856. They've incorporated more debt in those 10 years than since the incorporation in 1856. Like, think about that. That's because they can print this stuff. And as Tony famously says, they have created a system where they can live for free, where you get fucked, they live for free. This is not prices going, this is absolutely broken money. And people say to me, you know, isn't Bitcoin a bit risky? I said, dude, like, go to ChatGPT and ask it, if you've got $1,000 today and inflation's 5%, how much is $1,000 worth in 30 years? Just pure math. You lose 70% of your fucking dollars. It's not up for debate. The riskiest thing in the world is to do nothing. When you finally pull that veil back and realize that you are living in this reality, that's when you start to go, actually, I need to off-ramp my head completely into something else, which is what Tony's trying to drive home. Sean.
For everyone in Australia, like what Adam's saying, the M3, which is like the money that we use in Australia, in the last 5 years, it's gone up by 56%. So like, basically Australia's been around for about 100 years. In the last 5 years,
200 years.
200 years. I think they're in currency, but anyway, in the last 5 years, they've taken half of all that money and added on top in 5 years. That's about 11% inflation per year. That's why everything feels more expensive.
Just imagine all this money just being thrown in the pot. It has to find somewhere. So it's going to go to asset.
And we've seen that. Like with houses and everything like that have gone up, and eggs and beef and everything. Like, everything is always going to cost more in fiat dollars. So what's the point of saving in Bitcoin? It's scarce. There's only 21 million. Nobody can make any more. The governments everywhere around the world are going to print fiat forever. That's the nature of fiat. That capital is going to find its way into hard assets, the hardest asset being Bitcoin. So you don't even need a lot. You just need a little bit to be able to protect yourself, because Bitcoin and purchasing power is going to go up quicker. And if you don't get it, read this one book, The Big Print by Lawrence Lepard. It'll explain it in one book. It'll take 13 hours to read. Yes, it's a little bit of work, but you're going to work 60 to 80,000 hours in your life for money that nobody teaches you what the fuck it is. Like, everything Tony's saying, Tony is like literally one of the best people in the entire world to be able to teach people to protect Bitcoin. Like, literally, like, this is the guy right here. Everything he's saying is factual, is true. But don't trust Verify. Put in the proof of work, call them, have a free call. Whatever it is, we're not sitting here. You buying Bitcoin doesn't benefit anyone here. It will benefit you. I've had shit periods in my life, and it doesn't need to be like that. Like, if you find something that works, pass it on. And the only thing I'd ask is, when that orange pill goes off for you, ladies and gentlemen, give someone a book and pay it forward. Because we can move into a very beautiful world. And once you're on that Bitcoin standard, and like Adam had when he realized it was unfuck you money, like unconfiscatable money, it's like, wow, like it just gets more and more and more amazing. And that happens now. So like, TikTok next block.
Absolutely. Make no mistake, all the assets globally are going to find their way into Bitcoin at some point. So if you're hoping to see a higher Bitcoin number, like if you're still measuring it in fiat, your happy days are coming really, really fast, because right now over $900 trillion worth of assets worldwide are going to be funneled into an asset that is finite in supply. That is coming, because it's the only thing that will make sense. Anything that's denominated in that worthless paper will be like a stupid decision. And at some point, more people will realize it. That's why the institutions are here. I mean, institutional adoption of Bitcoin, I don't personally like it, but it's unavoidable. They know that if they don't do anything, they're going to zero. So why do you think they're FOMOing into it? And they have the big funds. I want to see a world where more regular people are
I
buying
know.
Bitcoin. But these folks, unfortunately, are living scared for whatever reason. And the big boys with the funds are taking advantage of this narrative by keeping them scared and distracted so that they can finally vacuum clean all the remaining supply. And then everybody else is like, you know, a little pawn in their hand. So the window of time is very small. In fact, I don't know. I thought it would be gone already, but I have a feeling 2025 will be like the last year, or maybe at some point early 26. Beyond that, unless you're sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, the only way you're going to get Bitcoin is by earning it.
Mark Moss put up a post this morning, and just not to knock the little guy, but like Tony said, if you don't stand up and say something, then you deserve what you get, right? But the number of little guys that still tweet in my comments are like, oh, it sounds like a bit of a scam to me, or a bit dodgy on my brother. Like, you need to just get out of the pub in Dubbo and have a look around and realize that fucking the smartest motherfuckers in the world are putting everything they have into this. And you're sitting there with your mates going, oh, I don't know, mate, fucking sounds a bit dodgy. I'm like, all right, champ, you sit with that and we'll just have to, you know, see you in the Hunger Games, because this is what's happening. Basically, you just got to bet on a crack addict wanting to continue to smoke crack. That's the bet. You know, like, you know, is that going to happen? Yes. That's the government. The government is the crack addict that knows nothing about how to get high on its own supply. And that's it. They're going to keep doing that. That's the bet we're making. I don't see any leadership or consensus.
It's not even a bet, Adam. Like, it's mathematical certain. Like, the world's in a debt spiral. It's inevitable. All fiat currencies go to their intrinsic value, which is zero. They're not backed by gold. They're backed by fear. That's it. But that's happening everywhere.
You know, as a side note, maybe this will help illustrate. Like, in my head, do you know what I see? Have you guys seen the movie Elysium?
Yes.
Okay, where the world, you know, where the rich and powerful have left Earth to live on this, like the system outside, above Earth, where everything is utopian. You know, AI medical systems that scan you and cure you. Nobody ever gets sick. You're living in a, you know, in a leaps of luxury, no issues whatsoever. Whereas the rest of the world are living in the slums, the rest of Earth. You know, like at some level in my head, I think we're headed into something that looks somewhat like this. People with unconfiscatable money and those dependent on government handouts. Like, what world do you want to live in? Maybe that example is a bit extreme, but I think it drives the point home that we're headed towards something that looks like this.
Hmm. Very interesting. I got one parting question for you, because I know we've all got other things to do today. I get this question all the time. I already know the answer to both of them. I'm going to ask you, and I want everybody here listening that's still stuck in this number go up. Sean, at what price are you selling your Bitcoin?
I'm not, ever.
Tony, when are you selling? At what price should you get out before the next dip?
Selling it for what?
Correct.
Selling exactly. It for what?
Just maybe it might help people for a bit of context. Bitcoin's the best money that's ever existed. Use it as money, but trade it for things of value. Pay for people's services or experiences or whatever. You can use it as pristine money. It's the best money. But to sell it into fiat that's debasing 11% a year, like that's insanity, man. That's crazy.
So Sean, what you're talking about practically here is that, you know, like if you go onto a Bitcoin standard where you keep all of your money in Bitcoin, you go, okay, here's some money each month that I just spend. Because if you want to do business with Tony's company, you have to pay in Bitcoin or be paid in Bitcoin, or you can't be a supplier to the Bitcoin way. And you can only pay Tony in Bitcoin. So, but there are people around the world now that's what they do. Like I'm starting to spend Bitcoin now, but I'm moving more of my fiat, all of it basically, into Bitcoin, and I'm paying in Bitcoin. So I'm paying in Bitcoin and I'm saving in Bitcoin, but I'm the same. I'm like, dude, you don't get it yet. Exactly what Tony said is for what? And when you're poor or you're middle class, you don't really have money. When you've got money, your problem becomes, what do you do with the money? And so when you sell something, you're like, okay, well, like I sold a bunch of buildings. Okay, well, now I've got a new problem. I've got cash. Where do you put that cash? And when you finally get to the end of it all and you go, okay, I've got Bitcoin. Now, where do you buy it to Bitcoin? Well, the hurdle rate is too high. It's too hard. There's nothing I can say, unless it was an absolute lifestyle buy, There's nothing I would buy other than Bitcoin. So why would I sell it? Why would I incur, like, for most people, they're going to incur a tax liability as well. I'm out of that game now as well. But why would you sell the hardest thing, then pay tax and buy the softer thing? Like, sell the winner, pay tax to buy the loser. Why the fuck would you do that, Tony?
There's no such thing as profits in fiat. You know, when people tell me I made a profit, I'm like, what profit did you make? You got more toilet paper. That's what you're calculating as valuable profit. People will argue, yeah, but I have bills to pay in fiat. I'm like, great. Sell the portion of Bitcoin that you need to specifically pay for these bills, and then keep the rest saved in your Bitcoin. Why do you have to sell it all to stack worthless paper that is created by a system, designed to steal from you? That's lunacy, right? So there's no such thing as profits in fiat. Fiat is a lose-lose game. But you know, when we've been brainwashed since the day we were born, you sort of have to put your ego aside to accept that you've been duped, which is a very hard thing to do. And I understand that because it really pissed me off when I found out as well. But you know, you learn, you move forward, and you never repeat the same mistake again. And at least now we have that option, like a real viable option. In my case, Bitcoin is not an investment. Bitcoin literally saved my life after what I went through. So for me, this is not about money. For me, this is about purpose. It's a mission now. And the more you understand Bitcoin, and I'm hoping more people will get it in the same way I understood it, your life will make a complete 180. I can promise you that 100% guaranteed.
Yeah. And guys, if you the other thing that this has turned into a bit of a fucking pitch for Tony, but I don't mind because it's great work. But
Nobody better.
nobody better in the world. What you said, Sean, is absolutely true. We're super privileged to have Tony here in this environment for you to listen to. But I've now taken to another level, and I'm incorporating in another country under Tony's guidance with his team. And I'm going to be over in Panama in February with them, with a bunch of other freedom fighters, people who are freedom maxis, and we're learning, to set our lives up in a jurisdiction that wants us and is happy to have us there. And it's not only going to are we going to be set up and become sovereign, right, double sovereigns, but I'm going to be able to meet all these other crazy bastards like Tony, and hang out with them. Like, Tony and I were in Athens recently hanging out. I picked up my Bitcoin node hand to hand from him, and we're sitting there looking at the Parthenon on the top floor of a building, and then we went and smoked cigars at the best hotel in the city. And this is living the sovereign or the Bitcoin way. And this is Tony's vision. I'm now a full advocate for it. And I invite anybody out there that wants to be free. Like, I've been through the full journey of wealth from, like, starting with zero and going to the airport and looking at the travel board going, I just want to be able to go wherever I want, when I want to go. That to me was success. And I've now returned at age 50 to that vision of being truly free. And now that I've now off-boarded and in this Bitcoin world, in this sovereign life, the feeling that comes with knowing that I custody my time, my money, and I don't have a government in my pocket all the time is just, I cannot, it's not about the money. It's about the feeling inside of just being free. And it's just incredibly empowering. And it's the best thing I've ever done. I thank you for that, Tony, for being a light in the space. And I have an orange light behind me because that's what Bitcoin is. It is the sun. It's what gives us life. It's what gives us warmth, and it's pure. And that's why I have the, that's why Bitcoin to me is so. If you're listening, start your journey by understanding self-custody, and then keep listening to this orange voice. And it's quite interesting where it will take you.
Absolutely, man. Just the last parting words, guys. There are options. None of us are stuck. It's just, you know, we have to accept that maybe at some point, you know, being uncomfortable for a little while in order to get more comfortable later on. But believe me, it's well worth the effort because you don't want to be stuck in a life of slavery. And you know, doing nothing is a recipe directly into this.
Sean, Tony, thank you for joining us, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure. Let's do this again, maybe once a quarter or something. And maybe
Sounds
next time
good.
we'll dive deeper on the AI stuff, Tony. I feel like there's a whole
Absolutely.
conversation there.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. It's always great chatting with you.
All right. Let me just say goodbye. Drop a comment, guys, if you enjoyed the pod, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye for now. Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.